afternoon. Today is Wednesday, March 26th, the 85th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, Humboldt County 2nd District Supervisor, Estelle Fennell. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks, Brian. How
you're,
are you?
You're starting to, like, get your attitude back here.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't take
you
it
You know, long. And it's not just me, either, that's saying that.
I had a feeling about that.
Yeah, imagine that. So we'll see what we can do as far as pulling out a little bit of attitude. We'll spend a little bit of time talking about power and the, I guess, the premium energy tax. I don't know. Everybody has different names. So we'll talk a little bit about that. There was a presentation yesterday during the supervisors' meeting. And we'll also get an update on the water situation in southern Humboldt. Aldron Laird from the Water District was in before, well, last Friday, and we'll spend a little bit of time talking about some of his comments and some of the things that are going on with water trucks in southern Humboldt when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggy of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank. Our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Time. It's 3:13. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Estelle Fennell. But before we do, our quote this afternoon. Here's a great one. From Edna Woolman Chase, sometime in 1954. Quote, fashion can be bought. Style one must possess. Isn't that cool?
I like that.
Yeah. So strut it, baby. Oh, my. So the concept of people using over a certain allotment of power.
Mm-hmm.
The libertarian side of me says, so you pay as you go. You want a Cadillac instead of a Yugo?
A bug.
Guess what? Mm-hmm. You're going to pay a little bit more. You want more water. You want more power. You want more food. You want a bigger house. You want bigger property.
Mm-hmm.
Pay for it. I guess that doesn't really work as far as PG&E, does it?
The situation is that from now, you know, for as long as people have been growing marijuana indoors, PG&E has been paid. And they have certain levels that you pay at. The concept that's being floated now is the one that was taken up by Arcata, where you actually charge people extra by way of a tax, a 45% tax on that extra power over 600% of normal household usage. So apparently it worked in Arcata to the extent that what it did was, apparently, it sent people out of Arcata as far as growing indoors was concerned, because when they were first doing their study, they estimated they had over 600 people who were using over 600% of normal. And by the time they got the system in place and they actually were charging people, it was down to under 100, 96 to be precise. Did people leave Arcata and go somewhere else? That was the question that was brought forward, and we'll be figuring out whether or not that actually impacted the unincorporated areas or not.
It's interesting for me because, you know, on the one side, we got the argument of pay as you go. Okay, fine. And the other side is, well, if this is going to be the case, then PG&E is part of the legal arm or criminal justice arm. Give us names, give us dates, give us the particulars. Well, no, that's confidential.
They're not going to do that.
You go, okay, now wait a minute. So on one side, you're protecting the illegals that happen to be high users, so you make more money. And on the other side, you're saying, but we want to have you in the community use less energy so we make less money.
Yeah, well,
is there a break in that logic?
Well, that occurred to me when Arcata was actually bringing their plan forward. I said, well, this is about clean energy, but it's really... It's a strange kind of a situation where you're saying, okay, well, if you're using it, we're just going to tax it, and underlying that is we're hoping that since we are taxing it, you're not going to use it, And I don't know, it appears to have happened in Arcata.
Now, Randy and 2 months ago, 3 months ago, mm-hmm. we did a show on it. And the question was, because the money hadn't been received yet, the first mm-hmm. payment right. check of this overage thing. Since that was based on people paying, mm-hmm. was that number down to 15% of what the total was before mm-hmm. a true number reflecting consumption, or was it a number of reflecting payment? And that those who had these huge bills were just going to run it until they got shut off, and then they would walk away like they tend to with the leases and go to another building
goodness,
and start all over again.
You have such a suspicious nature.
Yeah, something about not trusting the bad guys. I don't know.
You went further than that. You actually, posited a whole other scenario, which had never occurred to me, but it's a possibility, that's for sure. Yeah, so use it till you can. I mean,
is there somebody that
run it dry.
Yeah, exactly, to use a water phrase. Is there somebody in the county who will, if this thing does come to fruition, are you guys going to assign a department or an individual as a liaison? Just, I'm thinking for continuity as much as anything, so that they would start to understand PG&E lingo.
Well, here's another offshoot of it, and that is right now, Humboldt County does not have a utility tax. We don't have a utility arrangement with PG&E. So the fact of the matter is, the question is, will everybody be taxed? Not just the people who are overusing it. And that's a big question that that has to be resolved.
And cities normally have that?
Yeah. Arcata had it. Eureka had it.
As much as you might think, I've not been elected yet. Period.
Yeah.
So there is something.
There
like
is
that.
There
okay.
is a
well,
relationship
right,
the already.
Bill, there's a little mm-hmm. some kind of tax.
Though. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So, but we don't have that as a county. So that's something that would have to be set up. And does that mean that more everybody's going to be paying a tax, aside from the people who are going to be paying a higher tax? And
that's not the intent of this, is it?
No. But I don't know how it will work otherwise. And then the other thing is that has been brought up by people in the unincorporated area, and this has to do with the environment, which you brought up earlier, is what if in the unincorporated areas people decide, okay, if PG&E is going to make it more costly for me, I'm just going to go get myself a generator and go pollute the atmosphere even more.
Don't steal my thunder. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 3:19.
Sunshine for Humboldt. If you have a dog or plan to add one to your family, you'll want to know about the Humboldt Dog Obedience Group, or HumDog for short. HumDog, a nonprofit organization, began in 1978 and is run by 50 volunteers. Its purpose is to teach dogs good citizenship. HumDog conducts classes nearly every Monday evening throughout the year at Redwood Acres. There are puppy training classes, basic training for dogs over 6 months old, and more advanced classes. The modest fees are used to pay the rent and professional trainers. Each session lasts an hour. HumDog also puts on 2 annual events, the Dog Expo in March and the Dog Agility Trial in August. Both draw crowds of dog lovers. For those who apply for funds to spay or neuter their dog, HumDog has a special fund that may be able to help. See their website, www.humdog.org. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:24. We're back to talk shop this afternoon with Estelle Fennell. Estelle, you kind of broached into an area that I was hoping to be able to kind of get a wow from you, but you beat me to it. Because of the rural nature of so many of the areas in the county, not population-wise, mm-hmm. certainly, you know, McKinleyville isn't going to be the Myrtletown, mm-hmm. Pine Hill, et cetera. But for those large consumers of energy for various and sundry purposes, aren't a lot of them on their own generators now? The big facilities that are just grinding it out, and you hear about these huge monster generators out in the wilderness areas. Would this even impact those types of folks?
Well, interestingly enough, there are fewer generators than there were at the beginning of the indoor growing boom, let's say. What basically happened is that in 2010, when there was an attempt to legalize marijuana, everybody in the world, including people coming before the supervisors, which I thought was ridiculous, was talking about the economy and its impact on the economy. And everybody who wanted to make a lot of money in the marijuana trade started growing more plants. And so it brought down the profit margin, if you will. So the people kept on growing more and more and more and wound up going outdoors. So you have all these greenhouses now and less of the indoor in the unincorporated areas. So this might bring people back indoors in that regard. I don't know. You know. Bottom line is there is an argument to be made that that's more destructive of the environment than charging people for high energy use under PG&E.
Okay, so now you're bringing the environment question into play here.
Well, that's the whole pretense. That was the whole...
Is that the basic?
That was the basic argument made by Arcata when they came forward with this. This came under the clean energy thing. It was basically a punishment for using more energy.
Oh, well, isn't that an interesting sword to be swinging?
Mm-hmm.
Not that it was illegal. Yeah. But it was just using too much energy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it didn't have, know, the we're all just going on the assumption that if somebody is not is residential, not industrial, and is using over 600% of normal, then they're more than likely growing marijuana in this day and age. But you also have the argument that there are plenty of people now growing industrially in big industrial buildings, and they won't get that tax. So it's kind of it's certainly something that's got to be looked at in terms of whether or not it will achieve its eventual goal.
Would it make sense to back it out one step and say high consumers or users of energy, period, and then have a classification for commercial radio,
yeah,
commercial, mm-hmm, versus other,
because
I would think, as you were indicating, if you got a warehouse and it just looks like a regular tin shed, but it's a little bit bigger, you could be a industrial customer and using a pound of energy. And you'd slide right underneath this thing, wouldn't you?
Oh, absolutely. I don't know what it takes to get an industrial rate. I haven't talked with PG&E
probably
about that.
A lot of use.
That would be my guess. Yeah. Well, you can have whatever, a cover industry, whatever. You could say you were manufacturing widgets and instead of plants.
But I would think something, if that's the goal.
Yeah.
I still kind of have a big question mark at the end of that. But if that is the goal, you do that. You got all these folks using a higher percentage than you would anticipate. It's not as if there aren't a lot of PG&E folks and somebody could just kind of go around and spot check.
Well, the bottom line is this all comes down to housing, because these are residential accounts. They're using over 600% of normal. And if you've got plants in there, you don't have housing, basically. You certainly have housing that's deteriorating over time. I've spoken to people who were property owners renting out, and whoever that was renting from them got busted, and they've got to go in there and tear the whole thing apart and replace siding and everything else.
Yeah, down to studs, pretty much.
Yeah. They've got mold in there and all sorts of toxins and everything. So, we're talking about providing housing, and then we're making...
Under the umbrella of energy savings.
Yeah, right. I don't know. It's certainly a big discussion, and it's...
Maybe I don't have to run for office. It sounds like I've got me on there already with you. KINS, News and Information Times 3:30. We'll be back with more from me.
decade of difference, making a real difference for the future of the North Coast. This is Jim Ritter with Humboldt Live in the Arcata High School Career and College Center. Do you have life and work experiences that could be of benefit to our local youth? We're recruiting community members to mentor and share ideas with our middle and high school students. Please call me at 839-5114 for more information. The decade of difference, making a real difference for the future of the North Coast.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Estelle Fennell, still the supervisor, not me.
For now.
For now. Estelle, water in Southern Humboldt, what was it, November-ish?
Mm-hmm.
We started to hear, and you certainly were more than sharing, with some of the goofiness that was going on with weather being a little warmer and the water being a little less prolific, scared. And some of the things that were going on in Southern Humboldt. I still have visions of water trucks pulling up. I mean, it just is so bizarre but obviously that was going on. What's the situation with the infrastructure? What's the situation with the water right now as we look towards another summer?
Well, what's interesting is, you know, that the whole state is very cognizant of the fact that we're in a drought now. So you've got the water bond issue coming up. You've got a state of emergency that is kicking some money down for infrastructure. And then you've got an interesting situation here in Humboldt County where on the south end, there is a real possibility people will be hurting for water. And then in the north end, there's a real possibility that there will be too much water. we're trying to work with that in terms of the whole county-wide picture. But right now, interestingly enough, those March rains really did a good job of topping a lot of the supply up. But, you know, we didn't have the snowpack, so are those springs going to dry out? And, you know, is the water going to be less in the year? And I would say yes, probably.
So with the situation as it is currently with the infrastructure that's in place, are we just going to see a lot of water trucks going down from here being the Bay Area, down south in the southern part of the county, and just that'll be the way to kind of backfill in for the next little bit? I mean, I can't imagine any project being done within 10 years, let alone something as significant as hundreds of millions of dollars. So as a short-term bridge, is that okay? Fine, that's what'll happen, and we'll figure out some agreement between the county and the water district, and thank you very much, and Humboldt County goes on.
Well, you know, Brian, one of the things we have to keep in mind is that we really can't control nature. I just read something yesterday that we're looking into an El Nino next year. If we have an El Nino next year, forget it. We don't need any extra water. We're going to have too much again.
The temporariness of a permanent situation. Yeah.
Right. But the big thing that we can look at and that I've been looking into a lot is water storage. If people can store in the wet months, they have it for the dry months. That's time-honored. And what we're trying to do is incentivize people to do that. And that is an amazing thing to see, is how many tanks are going out into the country.
You know, we've seen a lot of water tanks in the last 4 to 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I was not thinking personal, private, residential utilization with that water, however. I was thinking more about black pipes going into rivers that are run dry.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Being the sarcastic individual that I tend to be. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you're seeing definitely one of the possibilities out there. Oh, God, thank you for that image. That's really horrible. Brian, please. I prefer the trucks.
Okay.
You know? And, you know, one of the things to keep in mind is that Humboldt Bay Municipal Water District actually has a water line going all the way to CR already. So it's at least south of Eureka.
Avoid the congestion.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Spoken like a Southern Humboldt girl.
Well, talking about water trucks and stealing and all that, quite a few water districts and private water owners or storers or whatever are putting locks. Can you believe that? That's That's the level we've gotten to now. They're locking their outlet valves. It's kind of a sad statement, but it's good.
Well, you learn from the past.
Yep.
And that would be a simple way to do it. It seems goofy, but okay.
Well, just think about the Bridgeville School, 20,000 gallons overnight or over the weekend.
I mean it's certainly, there's need for it
mm-hmm.
if this is what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
There was, last Friday, we spent some time, Alderman Laird, from one of the board members of the Water District, mm-hmm. was in. And we were talking about a potential pipeline to the Bay Area, to Sonoma County. They're doing a study, or they're commissioning a study. The one that seems to be most logical is running over the ridge.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Certainly would help, put a spur in for Southern Humboldt. Okay, now you everybody's got swimming pools and everybody's happy, and you may not have to spend that $20 for a lock. Okay.
But it goes over by Alder Point, right?
I mean,
the traditional route, actually,
right.
That the wagon trains and the railroad and everybody else went.
So that is one option.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, that's not going to be a cheapie.
No. Nope.
And it's not going to be a quickie.
No.
But it is out of the Coastal Commission, so it might be done relatively.
That's a good point.
But on the flip side, what he said was driving this was to get water down to the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
That was the customer. They were sure to. But he said that it'll be twice as expensive as putting in a desalinization plant. Okay.
Exactly.
To me, why bother with a study, because they'd be stupid to pay for twice as much for something they could put right there and have full control on, rather than relying on our guys.
And the one place that kind of needs it desperately is Santa Barbara, and they've already on their way towards that. I really don't think that that's as important. And also on a political and a heartfelt side, I would really like to see that water used in Humboldt County as much as possible, or at least in the Eel River. It's kind of weird, but you're taking it out one end to put it in the other. I don't know. The bottom line, I looked at something. I was over in Rio Dell at the city council talking with those guys in terms of whether or not they might be helped. And there is a way that you can come and use the natural water course, possibly. Okay, so you come over, and it's weird, but you might go into the Van Dusen and come down that way towards Rio Dell and Fortuna area.
So you use the
So you wouldn't have water. To have a pipeline going that way. You get it. But I think they're very tied into using the intertie that they have now. They have a piping structure. So I don't know. But
upstream here, are you?
Yeah. But I don't know. We might want to look at that at least.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:43. We'll be back with more from Estelle Fennell.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass. 7 p.m. Spanish Mass. And on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:44. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Estelle Fennell. Estelle, looking at some of the different challenges that are out there, certainly water is one of those things that is going to be a challenge. I don't think, as long as we continue to build in deserts and have the huge agricultural demand we have for the deserts to be producing, I get it. Okay. The thing I don't get, regardless of whether it's a pipeline or baggies or trucks or whatever helicopters and whatever else might be out there, is a lack of compensation for our area. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the Eel River. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's say the Eel gets all backfilled all up mm-hmm. again. Well, now we have happier cows. Okay. We got a couple more fishies coming home. Okay. But it's really not an economic boost.
No.
And that's the thing that I see that we need here, particularly after the marijuana is legalized.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still going to have the constraints on logging and fishing and all the other things that are our traditional areas. Water is a commodity. How can we maximize commercially
mm-hmm.
that commodity?
Well, first of all, you know, the whole infrastructure that it would take to move it wherever the Humboldt Bay Municipal Water District would move it is hopefully going to be underwritten in some way by one of these programs that have been put in place at the federal or the state level. However, down the line, there's got to be, it's got to be paid for wherever it's coming out. You know, it's not free. So that's one side of it. But as far as the economy of the North Coast goes, I just think that we really have to concentrate on how we can build that up. And, you know, possibly the water is part of the story, but I think more importantly is the economy as a whole. I mean, let's say, for instance, that building starts again, you know, which it will, then
that would be a sign that we were really out of the recession.
Yeah, that would be a very nice thing. Yeah. I mean, for the year 2012, there were 119 houses permitted in Humboldt County. 119. That's not exactly a boom. You know, now that's Humboldt County, and we know that throughout the nation, there's just been a real slump. There was a boom earlier, which I don't think was sustainable, but, you know, when you go, you swing one way, then you swing the other. Hopefully you'll come back to the middle, and it'll be a little bit more. Even with all the restrictions, I think that so long as there's a market for the timber, we would be doing better for sure. And hopefully we're going to develop our harbor.
That would be something. Yeah, redevelop a couple of mills. That would be something. Yeah. That would be kind of impressive also. Well, we'll just have to kind of wait and see. But the thing I'm looking at is with, and I'm presuming the legalization will occur. Yeah. I think we're going to have such an immediate housing stock available here that housing prices are going to drop 20-25%. And a lot of folks who can't afford will be able to afford.
True.
We'll have some new industries like mold mitigation and things like that for people to be able to get into, and the contractor business will happen here. But that's not going to save the industry. That's not going to bring mills back. It's going to have to be the building on the West Coast and the Midwest. And that's the thing that I look at when I hear housing starts nationally. Mm-hmm. Is it really starting to happen or not?
Yeah.
But if it is, can we get the wood out of the woods?
Yeah.
Or are we so restricted now in the last 5 or 6 years that that's even going to be more challenging?
Well, I think that we, you know, we can look. People were concerned about the impact of industrial logging and put a lot of regulations in. But I think that we might work some way to the middle where we protect the environment and the economy.
Wow, what a concept. Thanks for coming by. We've been Talking Shop this afternoon with Estelle Fennell. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone, you'll see tomorrow.